You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
March 2nd, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Yes, folks, it's Casual Friday. What a crazy week. Seemed to fly by. Though not so much. I don't know. I'm of two minds of it. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter and Isabel Gillies and maybe John Benjamin. I don't know. We may get Benjamin today. I'm not sure. But folks, and we'll also be talking about Rush Limbaugh, about racist judges, Canada. That battery I keep talking about, I keep threatening to talk about. But before we do any of that, we're going to speak to Cliff Schechter. And before we do that, we need to hear Cliff Schechter's theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter. LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, Cliff Schechter, welcome to the program, Cliff.
Thank you, Samuel. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little bit tired because I'm having a problem with my daughter who doesn't seem to understand the concept of you need to stay in your bed all night, not come in into our bed and then wake me up and then have a two-hour argument about it.
Yeah, those are always good times, aren't they?
Oh, there's nothing.
We've had our 2-year-old. He's in the phase of, for some reason, he's suddenly taking uppers at 8 o'clock at night, and there've been a few nights he hasn't gone to sleep till like 10 at night. You know, those last couple of hours, you just want to like relax. It makes the whole thing doable the next day.
Right.
And when you lose that, what do you got left, Sam? What do you got?
I got just vodka. Is basically at that point.
That's
the thing. My daughter is 6.5 years old. And, you know, get over it already. I mean, come on. God, I don't know. This is going to have. It's basically, she's going to go right up to the age where all of a sudden it's just going to be some other sort of horror show, horror show.
Are you going to, like, I mean, what does she think? You're going to be her parents her whole life or something?
Get a copy of Tangled. She's sent off to that military school. I'm trying to track down the military academy in that movie Taps. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh,
that's the one I'm going to.
I do. That was excellent stuff. Wasn't that the one where they're all like, there's a group of secret guys that would basically whack anybody that was trying to. Do I have the right one?
I think you're thinking of Star Chamber or something. I think you're thinking of.
I think I'm thinking Code of Honor is what I think I'm thinking of. There was one like that that took place at the Citadel, where they have like a secret group.
Shocker. Taps was with like Timothy Hutton when he was a kid, I think, and what's his face? The famous Tom Cruise was in it. Sean Penn. It was, you know.
I think I have vague recollections, like early 80s kind of thing.
Yeah. That was the last time I saw a movie.
I thought you watched all the movies Chris Rosen tells you to watch.
No, Chris Rosen I don't, but I do actually watch the ones Isabel Gillies tells me about, and that's coming up soon. But Cliff, come on. We have some more important things to talk about. Now, let's start with
Let's start. Where do you want to start? Now, I had said yesterday I wasn't probably going to say the name Breitbart ever again. And then like 30 seconds later, I said the name. And, you know, and then I realized.
Well, I'm just interested in your take in general. Yeah, I'm interested in your take in general. Just I think it's I mean, just from an interesting perspective, just because obviously you had quite a few tets. That's probably not the right way of putting it. But where you guys went back and forth on Twitter, and I don't know, I'm just interested. I'm one of those times I know I'm the guest here, but I'm kind of interested in your perspective, if you don't mind giving.
Well, we do have a widely circulated YouTube up of my comments yesterday, but let me say this.
I'm sorry about that, then. I missed that, apparently.
It's not.
I have Majority Report tattooed on my back, but once in a while I do miss an episode, and I do apologize.
I don't know. Did you see the Matt Taibbi piece on him?
I did. I read that last night.
And I thought, what did you think about that one?
I thought it was a pretty honest piece. I mean, you know, was it harsh? Sure, it was harsh. You know, Taibbi tends to be that way. I thought it was honest. You know, let me say, I'll say quickly before you say, you know, I asked you, but, you know, I might as well tell people, I don't know, whoever follows me on Twitter or saw anything I wrote, you know, I try to take a balanced perspective because while I don't believe in saying ding dong, the witch is dead and being mean, because it's somebody who has kids and whatever, the guy has four kids, he has a family. And so really it's not about my sympathy for him, of which I really don't have any. It's really about, you know, he does have a family. And so for that, I try to not sit around and be like, you know, ha ha, he's dead. On the other hand, you know, what I can't stand, and I'm not going to criticize other progressives, but I did see a lot of people doing this, which is the suddenly when somebody does terrible things when they're alive, the minute they die, it's like, well, there was an honest patriot fighting for his cause and all that. No, I'm not going to also lie and pretend the guy was any less than he was. I think the tweet I sent out is the most representative of what I think is, you know, my condolences to Breitbart's family, but also to the families of all those who lost their livelihoods and were defamed and whose lives were destroyed because of what he did while he was alive.
Right.
And that's honestly the way I feel. I do have I do feel sad for his family, as I do for anybody's family who loses a father, kids who lose a father at a young age. But at the same time, how many kids have fathers and mothers, you know, who lost their jobs because of this guy, who lost their livelihoods, who are poorer and don't have health care and have rougher lives because of the vicious way and really amoral and basic borderline sociopathic way he behaved. And I think to forget that just because he died, I think is, you know, where does that standard, you know, where does that standard stop? I mean, Francisco Franco dies. Do we say he was an awesome guy? I mean, again, I'm not saying that Breitbart was as bad. I'm just saying, where, you know, if we're not going to tell the truth when people die, where do we stop doing that? So that's my piece. You can say what you think about.
No, I mean, I think my sense was quite similar to that, and I think I actually sort of retweeted a couple of things that you said. You know, I saw the information when I was on the subway, because I sort of load up Twitter when I take the subway, and then I get off, and then I just started retweeting a bunch of stuff. But you know, as I was reading Taibbi's piece, and Taibbi basically said, you know, a douchebag has died, and you know, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. I actually found what actually sort of bothered me about Taibbi's piece was that he validated some of the stuff in that Acorn video. And I mean, I'm not saying that I think Taibbi's piece was actually too generous, but I think maybe it might have been, because you know what? At the end of the day, I don't care about Andrew Breitbart. I mean, like I said yesterday, I feel badly, like you do, for any children who are orphaned. And
but for him, no. I mean, I don't even care
about him as a human being. There's not enough room. If I was to care for him as a human being, I would be paralyzed with how many other people I would have to care about that I barely know or vaguely know or aware of, because, you know,
I couldn't agree more.
There was tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, Iraqi civilians that died because I paid taxes, that were killed because I paid taxes. So there's not enough room for me as a human being to care for him as a person. It's easier for me to feel badly for his children. But what I think is really sort of is really the point is that his work. And yes, I get that he was an entrepreneur and whatnot. You know who else is an entrepreneur? The guy who did Girls Gone Wild. He's a real entrepreneur. He really figured something out about direct mailing, too. And, you know, I'm not going to praise him on his death.
I'm sure there's people with sex slavery rings and all sorts of things you could call entrepreneurs.
You don't even have to go that far.
I know, and I don't mean to compare him 100%. Right. I'm just saying. Right. Yeah.
But we don't even need to. We could say Girls Gone Wild. You know, the guy who did Cheaters, that TV show, I think he was also a genius, frankly. The guy who came up with that idea. I've watched that show. It's unbelievably entertaining. So that's fine. I'm willing to say that Breitbart was an entrepreneur. But let's face it. The idea of even validating anything about that Acorn attack, yes, they did get one woman somewhere saying stuff that was inappropriate. She was a bad worker at Acorn. But there is no doubt in my mind that I could go to any large institution across the country and find something equally reprehensible, if not more reprehensible than that. And he used his entrepreneurship to essentially disenfranchise people from our democracy.
And he preyed on people, like, the important point, and you just made it, you know, if I went into Goldman Sachs or any of these places, and I walked up to some of the less knowledgeable people, younger, or there are people who are answering the phones, or they're doing I'm sure I could find ways to victimize people. And I don't, you know, to do that, again, that's what bothered me. And yeah, and I disagree on that, just because maybe, you know, what a few people say in a large organization isn't representative of that entire organization.
Right. And you know, and I say this with the full knowledge of this coming off of like some prank phone calls we replayed to Santorum's office that I did, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, I understand and I did understand Breitbart, I think, particularly because in many ways we were in the same playing field. You know, I mean, I would make prank phone calls to the offices of, and I don't really call them prank phone calls, but I would make phone calls to the offices of politicians. And, you know, I know I'm talking to a receptionist, or sometimes I'm talking to their communications director. And, you know, I leave it at that. It's a comedy bit that may have shed some light on this. But he never stopped there. You know, I mean, the idea that this guy considered himself, and he's written up as a merry prankster. You know, the merry pranksters did not pull their pranks as a way of attacking the weak and disenfranchised in our society. They did it as a way of attacking those with power who were not able to be attacked but with satire. So when this guy goes and says, you know, I'm just about uncovering, he is a reactionary. You know, the idea that he was going to uncover the racism that is involved in black organizations is just a farce. It's a joke. This man was not using a satire as a tool because it was the only tool available to attack the powerful. No, he was using satire as a way to pick on little people and to disenfranchise. And, you know, so I have no respect
again,
for his work. That's the thing.
That's right. That's important.
I don't care
about
him.
You were trying to bring down an institution.
I have no respect for
that's
his
important.
Work. And if
right.
anything.
I mean, it's just important, though, that I think, yes, you could compare yourself in some ways to what you did. Totally different. It's like Santorum's office wasn't going to shut down. People weren't going to lose their jobs. And the whole thing wasn't going to, you know, the whole thing wasn't going to be destroyed and people disenfranchised by what you did. I think there's a huge difference between making fun of an organization and actively going to try to hurt an organization that helps people and hurting those people.
I don't,
you know what I mean?
And I don't even see, to be honest with you, like, I don't even see that big of a distinction in that regard. The difference is that he did this on the, he tried to align himself with Abby Hoffman. And many times equated himself to the yippies, but he's wrong. His legacy is a wrong interpretation of his life when he led it. It was a misguided and deluded self-perception of his work Because the fact of the matter is that intrinsic in what they were doing was using the only arrow in the quiver they could against a powerful forces. This man worked in a reactionary way. So the tactics are not the issue. It is the targets that he chose. And it is much easier for me as a bully to go and mock the shortest kid and the weakest kid on the playground. It is a fundamental difference. And so, you know, I don't even care. The idea of calling him a douchebag like Taibbi did, that's irrelevant. That's irrelevant because, you know what? There are douchebags out there whose work I admire. The fact of the matter, his work was reprehensible. And right. That is the part of his legacy that people should be attacking. That is the part. It is, you know, forget him as an individual. It is the legacy. And the only way that I refer only to his self-delusion, because that was a way for him to spin what his work was. This is a man who had no interest or understanding of policy. He could not state a single conservative programmatic thing. And he was self-professed not interested in it. All he was interested in was attacking a personality type that he perceived and calling it politics. And he was interested in attacking those who would, I mean, what was it that he thought that Acorn was doing? You know, what was it that they were doing that he was so hell-bent on, you know? Now, his thing on, you know, the Wiener thing, it doesn't bother me as much. But his attacks on minorities.
Well, yeah, that was more going after the power, someone who was in a position of power. And no, you know what? But here's the thing. I mostly agree with you. The reason why I disagree a little bit on the tactics part is, again, it's all how you want to describe tactics. To me, who you're going after is a part of the tactics. In other words, if you were going places and you were victimizing people who are lower level workers at you know, larger organizations, you know, even if they were investment banks or places like that, you know, I think that there's a cruelty to that, you know. I don't think there is, you know, somebody who's a communications director or whoever for Santorum is actively going to decide to get a job for somebody who is you know, who we know what Santorum is because he's opened his mouth a lot lately. I don't need to go into what kind of guy he is. And so, I think that's an important, I mean, I guess I think we're arguing the same thing in just in a slightly different way, because the choices of who to go after, which is organizations that help people, but also the people he went after, he didn't call I don't know if Acorn had a CEO, but he didn't call the people at the top. He didn't go after the people at the top. He went after people who he knew were more vulnerable at the bottom to try to embarrass, hurt them, and then also hurt the greater organization by doing that. And again, as you pointed out, you know, the best thing about, if you want to look at Breitbart and use him as an example of conservative culture, he fits it to a T. You nailed him that time, which I think he blocked you on Twitter when you pointed out his Hollywood resentment.
Yes.
The truth is, the thing is that of course he didn't believe any specific policy goal. He didn't have any policies he wanted to actually achieve, because the conservatism today is completely based upon resentment and hatred of others. It's not based on, and again, it's not to say conservatism was always this noble thing. These people were always there, but the paranoid fringe has taken over the entire body. So even those that were more moderate conservatives, who I think actually had a program of balancing budgets and doing things that you and I might disagree with, but were reasonable things in a democratic society, you know, they've been pushed out, you know, and so. So in a way, he's so representative of who conservatives are today. Think about it. He's a guy that became a conservative because he resented people that didn't like him. He didn't like them, and so they were liberal. They had to be bad, so he was going to hurt them and destroy them. That's what his conservatism was based upon. It was based upon personal animus, resentment, status anxiety, and the rest. It wasn't based on, you know, having these beliefs about how to better society through conservatism. That's part A. Part B, as you pointed out, is you know, part A gets you to part B, whereas, again, there were no programs, kind of like there weren't with Herman Cain and some of these other jokers, and really the guys who are left right now, all they can do is tear stuff down. They're entertainers.
Yes.
They're not actually people that are serious individuals. So it's no surprise that he represented conservatism that way, too. I mean, they may claim to have programs. Let's outlaw gay marriage, and that'll make everything better. I mean, is that really a program? there aren't programs about how to systematically deal with society's problems.
Right.
There's hatred. I hate you because you use birth control and you want me to pay for it. I hate you because you have sex in a way that I don't believe in, you know, and on and on and on. And that is what he represented at its core. So in a way, he was really perfect.
I don't even think his hatred was that founded on even those values you're talking about. I
don't either.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I went and
it's not always, let me say quickly, because I want to be clear, it's not always the same hatred, but what conservatives are, they're a collection of hatreds.
Right.
I mean, race, some of it's religion, some of it's, you didn't hold the door open for me when I was walking through, I hate you, you're liberal,
exactly.
Now I'm going to become conservatism. I mean, there's all different kinds, but it's all based on different kinds of status, anxiety, resentment, you know, feeling of personal loss of power and the rest. I'll let you. Sorry.
No, I think, you know, I saw a tweet by that guy, Lee Stranahan. And
yeah.
And Lee became one of Breitbart's acolytes and was, you know, sent down to Occupy Wall Street to try and find anybody he could find to put on videotape to claim that there was some type of rape there or something. And
he was a friend of mine, to be clear, at one point.
And you know, he's a guy who I followed because I had remembered his videos in 2008 and sort of watched the trajectory of his career and at various times, you know, felt sort of bad for him because it looked like he had a tough time sort of financially at one point and then whatever. And he found a home with Breitbart. And I saw an exchange that he had, I think it was last night, where he sort of tweeted that he was a conservative. Like it was some type of epiphany. And it was a function of the liberal lies. And it was just like, wait, what?
He's bought it. Yeah, Lee's bought into it now. It's
no,
amazing.
But it'd be, like, you know, it's kind of, I am not a liberal or progressive or a leftist because of conservatives. In fact, I don't even need those, labels per se. I don't define my political values relative least at their heart, relative to the existence of other people who have other values. I happen to have these values that are based upon a notion of what I perceive society should be, not the fact that I don't like conservatives or I don't like, the liberal establishment. No, it's the opposite. It's the opposite. And there are so many of those conservatives who are just like, I don't like hippies, so I'm a conservative.
Right.
I don't
That's
like
exactly right,
the
yeah.
way, you know, like, does Lee Stranahan
Those
really
welfare
think that he
abusers
has a,
and, you know,
a
right.
sense of what, you know, I mean, does he, how many liberals does he come into contact with? 100? 1,000? Does it matter? You know, the bottom line is, it's like my political ideology is a function of the way that I view what a society should be organized as. Not that I don't like that guy who was such a dick to me the other day, and he turns out to be a conservative, so I'm a liberal. That's literally what I'm going through
exactly
with my
right.
6-year-old daughter. I don't
right.
like the Giants
program
because
for why you believe what you believe. It's
I don't like the
upon...
Giants. I like the Patriots because Billy likes the Giants, and I don't like Billy. What? Are you 2? Oh, no, you're 6. Okay, that makes sense.
But you're making a very good point right now, is that conservatism now is based on very – I've made this comparison before. I've written about it in columns I've written on very much exactly what you're saying right now, like childlike beliefs. I mean, when you watch your children in an essence – I hate to say this, as I love mine, you know, at some point, young are kind of like sociopaths. You know what I mean? They want what they want. They don't understand compassion for others. If you've got their car, they're going to beat your little butt up to get it, their toy car, because they want it. You know, and if you've got something they don't have, I mean, I've watched my kids fight before at times, and I'll say again, they could be lovely kids at times, so people don't think I'm ripping them, but I've watched them fight because they didn't want something until the other one had it, but then they want it. You know what I mean? Well, that's conservatism. You know what I mean? I mean, it's basically people that never grew up, which is, you know, that's like Ayn Rand, right? Mm. I mean, you know, her famously, the model of her character was a famous psychopath, right? I think who kidnapped and killed somebody. I mean, that's what these people idol, you know, that's the idol to them. That's the top thing. You know, you rise above the, you know, quote unquote slave morality, a little Nietzsche there. You know what I mean? And you embrace, you basically are able to not lock yourself into having to obey the rules of a society where there's a common good, and you think, you realize the good for others is in most cases good for you, but you actually just resent people for who they are and what they have, and that leads you to be a conservative.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's fascinating to see how this is playing out in terms of both from, you know, from commentators across the spectrum. You know, there's the issue of like, hey, you got to be nice to someone if they're dead, because apparently when you're dead, it's, you know, it's St. Peter or whoever it is, the guy at the
right,
you know, is like, oh, you know, been going over the press reviews. I don't know. I mean, that struck me. I wanted to touch base with you on that, but let's move because we don't have too
important.
Much time. But, you know, I think we've said enough. And, you know, the only, I just think that people should be, you know, it's irrelevant to me, you know, who Breitbart was. What's more important is that people should be attacking the work that he did, because it was really,
look, I will be consistent.
The marketing aspect was great, but you know what? You can find a guy who games SEO and getting 1.3 million hits on YouTube with, you know, 14 comments because the guys figure out how to get into the recommendation list. Yeah, that exists. I mean,
right. I think this pretty much covered, you know, we pretty much covered the whole thing. I just think it was important to say, and I just was trying to say from my perspective, just the same way, you know, I saw at every Republican debate, they're cheering somebody else's death. Yay, you know, the guy in the motorcycle without health insurance. Yay, you know, the death penalty. I don't believe in cheering death, so I didn't sit there. You know, I'm not someone, think, as hard as I wanted to cheer for the death of Osama bin Laden, I even thought at that moment, there's a moment where, yeah, I'm damn glad the guy's dead. And I'm glad somebody put two in his eye, but I don't feel like I stand up and go, yay. It's a, you know, when you have to kill people, it's not a happy moment.
Right, and I don't think, so, you know, I mean, obviously, I know you're not making the comparison between Breitbart and Osama bin Laden, but I agree with you. I'm just saying, in general,
death is not something to be cheered. In my opinion, I'm just offering my opinion on this. So my response to Breitbart was to be a balance and say, I don't cheer death, but I also don't pretend he was a good person. I feel sorry for his family, but I'm not going to whitewash who he was and pretend he was a good person now because he's dead.
The funniest thing I heard, though, was, I think it was Greg Gutfeld. What's that guy's name? The red eye guy? Gutfeld?
I think that is his name, yeah.
And some Fox commentator were like, he really embraced modern culture. And I just thought, like, what?
I don't even know what that means. Sadly, I think modern culture might have embraced him.
Praising a guy for embracing modern culture? Who the F doesn't embrace modern culture these days?
He had no
problem wrapping his arms around the idea of like Snooki or whatever. What the hell does that even mean? We just got a couple of minutes. I want to turn towards the Republican race just for a moment because George Will has a piece coming out this Sunday that basically is the first we're hearing about this from official Republicanism, Republicanhood, and it's been something that we have been going back and forth with probably for about 6 weeks, you and I, or maybe a little less. But that question of at what point does the big money on the Republican side start to focus on the House and Senate races because they see the Republican primary as a lost cause. And sure enough, this, I think, is the first we're hearing about it. George Will, this Sunday, via TPM, Talking Points Memo, Romney and Rick Santorum are conservatives, although definitely striking types. Neither, however, seems likely to be elected. If either is nominated, conservatives should vote for him. But there would come a point when conservatives turn their energies to a goal much more attainable than electing Romney or Santorum president. It's the goal of retaining control of the House and winning control of the Senate. Conservatives this year should have as their primary goal making sure Republicans wield all the gavels in Congress in 2013. So it has begun. We were predicting this for the past 4 or 5 weeks, and now we are seeing it. You're starting to see this is the first shot fired, basically saying, you know what, this is a lost cause. We should focus on what we should be, what is possibly still possible for us.
Well, I think also what added to that is also the what happened this week. Two very big things happened this week. You know, one in the Senate. One is that Bob Kerry decided to get in the race. Now, granted, he's, you know, I mean, some people. I know right. that everybody's excited about him. Although comparatively, which is what I do my best to do, to Ben Nelson,
right.
he is pro-choice. He, is, I mean, on a number of things, whereas Ben Nelson was essentially a Republican. I don't know, certainly on Iraq and some things, I have major disagreements with Bob Kerry. But who knows? Maybe living down in Greenwich Village for a while, we'll see. I do know that even when he left, he was more progressive by a long shot than Ben Nelson. So that, but let's just talk electorally right now. If you're Republicans and you're trying to get a majority, you're looking at first the Nebraska was yours, that race. From what I hear Bob Kerry in, now in the race, there's it's a margin of error race right now. With that the right winger or the treasurer or whatever the hell he is out there. And then Olympia Snow gets out. A race where, in full disclosure to everybody, in 2002, I worked for a bit on the U.S. Senate race for Shelley Pingree, who's now in the House, who is a phenomenally awesome progressive, and it looks like there's a good chance she will run for that seat. And I would tell everybody, you know, the having Tammy Baldwin, Shelley Pingree, and Elizabeth Warren running, I mean, you know, you help those three win, and you wait till you see the culture of that Senate change. But beyond Shelley's politics, assuming she runs or any Democrat there, you know, in a presidential year with Obama on the ticket, and what looks like the Republicans are doing themselves at the top of the ticket, now that, you know, you've got Maine too. So you've got, you know, in two places now, it just got a lot tougher for Republicans. And so the Senate suddenly is not such a gimme anymore. And again, so I think that affects Will looking at it too. I think they look at what's been going on. I mean, none of these guys look electable anymore. They've all destroyed each other. There's so much stuff now that's gotten so nasty. There's so much stuff on video and audio that Democrats don't even have to ever say anything but replay what they've said about each other and what their surrogates have said about each other and the people that have endorsed them have said about each other. You know, and so, yeah, I'm not surprised. Frankly, if I were them, you know, I'd be trying to protect the House.
That's
you
right.
know, and, because you don't want this to turn to a wave election against them, if you're them, where they lose the House, which is possible.
There, I mean, it's fascinating because the Republican candidates for president are not running for president yet. They're still running for the nomination, and they have yet to be able to make that pivot in a real way. I think, you know, Romney's trying. He's trying to do it, and he just lost Michigan in the general election if he ever had a chance. That's not going to happen now because
right.
he had to sort of tack so far to the right.
And I'll remind you that, like, a good percentage up in northern Ohio where the SCI, I think, where the UAW, I believe, AFSCME and others, and even I don't know if it was Obama or PACs were up on the air. You know, in northern Ohio, and I can say this in Toledo, Cleveland area, some of those, there's a huge industry based upon car parts. You know, the auto industry goes beyond Michigan.
Yep.
It affects a big chunk of Ohio. You know, I mean, so it really isn't limited to just that swing state, the damage that Romney's done to himself.
Right, and we're going to see it in Ohio this week, too, right? I mean,
that's right. It's coming up here this week.
Santorum's
still up.
Yep.
He's still up here. And, you know, without the strong Romney showing because he had that home district, the area where he grew up and the dad's name and the rest of that stuff, I don't know. You know, I'd give a slight advantage to Santorum at this point. I know it's gotten closer, but I don't think he's going to be able to rely on that, you know, the way he could. So it'll be interesting. And then you've got Georgia, which is Gingrich's home turf, so he may hold that. So maybe you may have a very mixed result on Tuesday. And so not only has it not been decided yet, it really doesn't look like it's going to be decided anytime soon. I mean, it's looking like this thing is probably going to go on for another month.
Oh yeah,
you know, and if not more. So I think you're exactly right. They're already doing that. We kind of figured they'd do that. You know, I mean, the economy is getting slowly better. That makes it tougher for them. But, you know, if they had a really good nominee, but I don't know who that really good nominee is. I hear all the guys they throw out and they dream about. Like, I'd like to see Chris Christie in an actual race.
Oh my God.
You know, if he actually got in there, you know, and waddled his way around the country, screaming and yelling at people, eventually people would just say, you know, eventually the meme, which is actually true, we got this guy's just a jerk. You know, and I think he's an unlikable jerk. He's easy to like in the abstract until you start seeing him up close in the way he treats people. You know, not to mention he also has a few things like, you know, on some of his stands on things like gun control in New Jersey that would play well in New Jersey, but will flip the Republican Party out.
Right.
You know,
I mean, this guy
Mitch Daniels, yeah, he really scares me.
Well, Chris
Christie, you know,
is basically Rudy Giuliani times 7 or 8.
Rudy Giuliani, if he put, like, you know, a WWF wrestler on top of him.
But yes. Look, I mean, I think nobody else is going to jump into the race. This is going to go on for a while. And the real question is, you know, the reason why this is relevant is because at the end of the day, what will the makeup of the House be? Because this will determine what President Obama does in his second term. I'm convinced of it. I think that the House has to we have to take back the House, because otherwise I'm concerned about the prospect. Either way, you know, if Mitt Romney wins and he has the Republican House and a Republican Senate, you don't even need a Republican Senate to do this. We're going to see cuts to Social Security and Medicare. I'm convinced that if President Obama is the president and has a Republican House and a Republican Senate, we're going to see cuts to Social Security and Medicare. The only thing that's going to stop cuts to Social Security and Medicare, in my estimation, is a Democratic House. With either president. It's just that you're more likely to get a Democratic House if President Obama wins. That's just the way
it works. And wins big.
Yes.
Right, and the same thing in some of these states. If some of these Senate races change, you know, and go from being ones where they were going to be close to ones where Democrats pull away, that also helps down ballot too, because there's a lot of money that's going to be spent on those Senate races, in advertising and crazy ass super PAC money and the rest. So, it's obviously it's hugely important because Boehner is Boehner and Cantor is Cantor, and they'll do everything they can to block everything because that's all they know how to do. You're right. It's interesting that they've gotten there. I would have thought they would have at least pretended they could win for a little while longer. And I'll throw out the caveat, the usual one, which is we never know. Economic crashes, terrorist attacks, the old live boy dead girl rule in Washington. It's not like this thing is locked up, but anything can still happen because you can't ever predict. When George Bush was sinking in the polls and everybody thought, oh, my God, I can't believe this guy got into office. You know, the Supreme Court kind of handed it to him and the rest. 9/11 happened. You know what I mean? I mean, that 2002 election would have been very different if that hadn't happened with Enron and some of the things that were going on back then. Bush probably would have gotten creamed in the Senate and the House. So it's important to remember, you know, and then obviously in 2008 with the economy crashing ahead of time, took an election that frankly was close and could have gone either way.
No.
To one where I'm
I
sorry,
disagree. I disagree with that.
Well,
analysis, but
okay, you can disagree with that, but I think you'd have to agree with the fact that. There's no doubt that had a huge impact on the election, and it certainly led. You're right. Maybe Obama wins anyhow. I don't think he wins North Carolina and Indiana and some other places, but maybe, you know, I think that just discredited the Republicans that much more. Whatever. I don't want to get into criticizing Obama's message again back then. I'll just say that things can happen. But unless something crazy happens, these guys have just—they've killed themselves.
Yeah,
you know?
It'll be interesting to see what in that George Will column that comes out Sunday, who's quoted, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, it'll be interesting to see sort of how real, you know, what message is being sent to whom by whom. When that George Will column comes out, because this is the beginning. You're going to start to see, I think, probably a sort of cascade of these type of columns. You know, Will does this column before Super Tuesday in anticipation of Super Tuesday being just a mess in terms of.
And important to note, David Brooks actually wrote a column you may have seen where essentially he almost seemed to be leaving the Republican Party.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw that one. I mean, I'm not saying I care hugely, but it's important in that, you know, when you look at it from Brooks, who's a guy that hangs on and hangs on and hangs on and hopes for the reasonable Republicans, which is what he constantly does. When he finally gets to that point where he's seen enough of this stuff, where he thinks maybe that's not possible anymore, I think we're at an, you know,
give him 2 months. Give him 2 months.
You're right. He may be back. That's a good point.
But all right, listen. I wanted to talk about Rush Limbaugh because I know you had a an exchange with that
the lovely Patricia Heaton.
Yeah, played the wife on Everybody Loves Raymond. What you got to a fight with her about?
Well, she's a crazy anti-choice activist who is another one of these resentful, angry people. I don't know what went wrong in her childhood that led her to get to that point.
Dude, she was married to Raymond, and he was always just like so. He was always, you know, so sort of he couldn't do anything right. That dude.
I know he screwed everything up, and seriously, like it just came down to the fact that I don't like seeing people use their platforms to bully people, and I don't try to get into these Twitter fights, but sometimes they find me, and in this case. You know, people had pointed this out to me, what was going on. And she had sent one or two tweets. She literally was sending this stream of tweets, just ripping the young woman from Georgetown, Sandra Fluke. Nasty and mean for her. And she tried to claim that she was trying to be funny, which, of course, that just reminds you why everybody else on that show carried her, and she's the nobody she is, because she's not really funny. But she did her best. She thought she was being funny, saying things like, hey, why don't you just not use birth control and have sex and all the STDs? Then we'll stop you from having to use birth control in the future. You know, really hysterical stuff like that. Another one of these B-list losers like, you know, Victoria Jackson and John Ratzenberger.
Wait. B-list? Dude, if Victoria Jackson's on the B-list.
W-list. No, I understand what you're saying. Yes. But the point is, there are people that, like, literally had some fame at one point, but everybody appreciates the fact that they're really not hugely talented people. They're one-note people. And so they seem to be very angry and resentful. My guess is they're resentful at Hollywood and the world because people realize they're not so talented.
I think to be fair to Patricia Heaton, who's probably just so swimming in cash right now, I think she's just a loon.
That may be true, but whatever the reason, you know, I don't really even care. Whatever the reason, she was picking on, this woman and saying unbelievable things. So I couldn't help. So I jumped in much the same manner Rush Limbaugh was, you know, I jumped in. And so it was fun. We had a little fun back and forth on Twitter, where she thought she was being all clever and funny and pointed out how progressives weren't funny.
Well,
you know,
people should go to Cliff Schechter's Twitter feed. You should be. I mean, I can't imagine there's anybody who's listening to the sound of my voice right now or in the future via podcast who is not following you on Twitter at Cliff Schechter. That is what you should be doing right now. And I'm going to talk more about the Rush Limbaugh thing a little bit later in the program because there is really an unprecedented attack on just. The right for women to copulate in this country now.
It's a disgusting and really just unbelievable thing. Deceitful of them, frankly, to enjoy sex.
I'm just surprised because I had no idea there was so many men out there who are copulating without the involvement of women.
I just want to know when women went from being the procreation machines they obviously are to actually trying to enjoy the sex. When does the burqa come off, quite frankly?
Exactly. All right. Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Sam. I appreciate it.
Folks, we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to the wonderful Isabel Gillies, who will be giving us a couple of movie recommendations for this week. And it's Lou Reed's 70th birthday today. So enjoy this tune. That was, I didn't know it was Lou Reed's birthday until Greg Mitchell's Twitter feed. So... more coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back with Isabel Gillies.
Foreman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician. Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure to welcome back to the program Miss Isabel Gillies. She is the best-selling author of It Happens Every Day and A Year. What happens every day?
Yeah, no it.
No it. Well, yeah. There you go. That's why you're a best-selling author and I'm not, because you know how to...
I'm an editor, really, at heart.
Really?
No, but I just edited it, see?
Right. And A Year and 6 Seconds. And what's this whole thing on your blog at isabelgillies.com? What's this whole thing where you're not losing your temper?
Yeah, I started a blog. Well, first I started because on January 9th, I vowed. I sometimes have a kind of big temper.
Have I ever seen that?
No. Practically no one has.
Really?
Because you have to be married to me or be my child.
Right. That's the way I do it, too. Nobody, well, I guess I should refrain from saying that nobody's seen my temper. I think maybe there's some people in this office that have seen my temper.
Well, I've gotten, once I lost my temper at a woman driving a car, but usually
once?
It's sort of, well, yeah, I really lost it, though. And I lost my temper once at, wait a minute, I really, really lost it. Oh, at someone at an appliance store.
Wait, Isabel, if you need to rack your brain about the times
no,
you've
no.
lost your temper, you don't lose your temper that often.
Yeah, but when
once
I do,
appliance,
I really do.
What did you do at the appliance store?
Oh, I got so angry at this woman. It was a terrible story, but you know, really yelling, and then
Wait. So wait, you're at a...
I was on the phone.
What do you mean you're on the phone?
I was on the phone with the appliance people.
So you weren't even face to face?
No, I was on the phone.
You just explained them. Like every day that happens in this office. Me on the phone yelling at somebody.
Yelling, but like I yell like it goes to cuckoo town. I go totally bananas.
Well,
but
let's
it's
hear
only
it.
Every once in a while. All right, well, let's see. Okay, the
do you want me to be the appliance store clerk?
Regain the rage.
You
yeah,
wanna...
so it was about a...
What was this, like J.R. Richards and Sons?
No, I wish. It was someplace I drove way the hell out to Brooklyn and found this place that later I read the reviews
on their
website.
Wait a second, wait a second. Were you on the phone? What'd you do, drive to the parking lot and call them up?
This took like 6 months, this whole process with these people that were... they put me on hold for hours, and I'd get so angry. This is me. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay, wait.
Hold on for a second. Do you want some hold music?
Okay.
Your call is number 43 in line. We appreciate your business.
Right. Okay. That's it's working for me, Sam. You know I'm an actor. Okay. Ready? I've got it. Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Listen to me. Will you? God damn it, will you listen to me for one fucking second? My husband not only is a lawyer but works for the New York Times. He will write something up about you so fast it will make you head spin. Now listen to me. I will throw this phone across the apartment. But okay, now listen. Like that. Like crazy.
Wait a second. So let me get this straight now for a second. You are claiming that your husband's going to write about a department store, an appliance store, in the New York Times, and then you're threatening to break your own phone.
This is what I'm talking about. I go nuts. I say things that... So think about it in a small way, like with the child.
I am about to slam my hand with a hammer!
I know.
That doesn't make any
that's
sense.
Why, it's ludicrous. That's and I go way into the stratosphere sometimes. And so okay. I did. I got really mad, and I go into this very dark place, and it's awful. So I vowed that I wouldn't lose my temper for a year. At anyone, ever.
Okay.
And then I was like, well, I'll write a journal about it, just so that you know. And then I thought, fuck it, I'll just write a blog.
All right.
And it's good. It's day 51. I haven't lost my temper.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like you lost your temper that often, anyways. What do you mean? It doesn't mean you can't get mad. What does that mean?
Doesn't mean I can't get angry. I just can't yell and like throw things and stuff like that.
All right. Well, I don't think that's healthy for you. I think you got to let it out.
Well, not to where it's like you're yelling at someone. Hmm. It's not good to yell.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I have that problem.
Well, you know, that's why it's, you know, but then I say I'm going to go and live in Maine. You know, I'll take the kids. I'll go to Maine. I'm always going to Maine.
You're taking the kids and going to Maine? Is it a threat to an appliance store? You better bring that blender or I'm going to move to Maine! That doesn't really... All right. Well, before you move to Maine, Isabel, let me first say that your last two recommendations on this program were Man on Wire, a documentary about a French wire walker.
Genius.
I'll talk about it in a second. And then the other one was about Jesus. Something about Jesus, right?
The Bible tells me so.
Yeah, the Bible tells me so. I haven't watched that one yet. I forgot. I'm sorry about that. But I did see the Man on Wire, and I watched it twice.
Oh. C'est vrai.
Yes.
You see, I just went into French.
Yeah. Oui. C'est vrai. And that was an amazing movie. Both because I thought it was a well-done movie, but it was also, it was an amazing story of a guy, essentially, they talked about a guy who set up a wire from one of the Twin Towers to another at the top and walked across it for like an hour.
45 minutes, yeah. You can't believe that he exists. Right? I mean, he's a true sort of mastermind. I mean, I couldn't believe it either. It does make you want to watch it twice because you can't believe it.
I have to say that, you know, and I think you probably know this, Isabel, about me, but I'm not, you know, I don't get moved by things like that generally.
But
like,
I've moved you twice with these movies.
Well, no, I wasn't going to say you. It was really more the guy who walked across the wire.
I know, but you also like Bill Cunningham.
No, I like that movie a lot, too. But I'm saying, like, when I saw the footage of him walking across the Twin Towers and the footage of people looking at this guy walking across this wire in the Twin Tower, I really thought, like, you know, in general, I'm too literal of a person. But there was something just incredibly transcendent about that moment. I mean, no pun intended. I mean, the guy's obviously walking 100 floors up. There was something just incredibly...
Breathtaking. No.
It does move into like a piece of... I've never understood wire walking as art until that moment.
Well, I don't think that genius and sort of people that are... That's what's so interesting about that, about a heightened person. It sort of doesn't matter what they do. You know, have that kind of gift, that kind of elevated brain. And, well, he had this incredible concentration that just...
It wasn't that I was impressed with him. I mean, I was, but it was just like, I actually, you know, I see installations. My sister is an artist and does installations, and that act when it was happening, when you're watching it, it really is just a moment of art. I mean, I don't know how to express it beyond that, because I'm not a lyrical person.
I think you're doing a good job.
Well, I mean, that's about as far as it goes for me.
That's why you have to see it, because you can't. It's sort of indescribable. You can't.
I mean, I can describe it. The guy put up a wire and he walked me doing these two things,
but you can't describe the feeling that it gives you, because it's so hard to imagine anybody doing that.
Now, did that win an Academy Award?
I feel like it did. Should we Google?
Well, no.
Or someone there can Google, right? I feel like it did, or it was nominated for sure.
Yeah. I wasn't really terribly aware of it. It was really unbelievable. Really an unbelievable thing. And then just also sort of weird insofar as, like, you know, the tower's not being there anymore, which it doesn't go into, but you're just aware of it. And
how high? How high up? I mean, it's so high.
So
in
high.
In the air where he was. You can't fathom it.
You know, it's funny because
that he was up there.
I was born in New York City, and so my family still had connection here, and we came down here in 1972 or 3, right after the towers were built. And I had, you know, I was 6 or 7 at that point, and I had a Polaroid camera that I was using to take shots. Remember those Polaroid cameras where the picture comes right out? And I took a shot standing right at the base of the towers straight up. And, you know, I remember just as a kid going, like, this is... You know, all buildings are big when you're a kid, but this was just beyond, you couldn't even conceive of it. It was like this sort of never-ending wall, Jack and the Beanstalk, and to sort of see someone sort of walk on less than 1 inch width, it's just crazy. I don't know. But, so what do you got for us this week?
Okay, well, I think that you in particular, Sam, and those of like mind will really dig this.
Okay.
Which is not a documentary, it's a mockumentary.
Mm.
So it's comedy.
Right.
And it's called The Trip.
The Trip?
The Trip. It is about two English actors.
I've heard about this, I've heard about this. Is this Coogan?
Okay.
Steve Coogan?
Steve Coogan.
Yep.
And Rob Bryan, or Bryden, B-R-Y-D-O-N.
Okay.
Bryden. And they take a food trip around England, way north of England, and they get in a car and go to all these restaurants. And Steve Coogan is a fairly famous English actor.
Yeah, he did. He's done so much great sort of TV and.
TV, right. He was on some big show. The two of them were on a big English television show, which I didn't know.
Tons
I'd never
of
heard
shows.
Of either of them. And I don't ever want to, with a comedy, I don't ever want to, you know, I want to manage everybody's expectations, but it's fucking funny.
Okay. All right. It's done. Funny. I'm going to watch that one. Definitely. I'm putting a star next to it.
That is a, yeah, that's, and someone's going to rip me to shreds for saying this. It's particularly male, I feel. Good for men.
Particularly male. Okay.
I feel like it's sort of a dude movie, except I was crying tears of laughter.
Hmm.
Really, really funny.
That's interesting. So you say you have a sort of a male perspective on these things.
Well, when I'm doing this, I'm watching movies. I watch a lot of movies I don't tell you about.
No, I know.
Because I don't think you're going to like them.
Right.
So, but then I come across one and I think, oh, this is like really sort of, like, so it's sort of like something snatches me up, and I think I'm going to talk about this one. But there's a lot of every one. There's maybe four or five that I'm just like, oh,
no, I know.
This one.
All right, so The Trip.
Okay, the second one. So
yeah.
The Trip. That is my primo recommendation
for
this week. The second one, I dearly, dearly love. It's a music documentary about Pearl Jam.
Hmm.
It's called Pearl Jam 20.
Pearl Jam 20.
And if Cameron Crowe made it, so it's really, really well made. But if you're, you know, those are our people. We're that's our group, right? That's our. They started in like 89. Oh. That's where
I mean,
19.
I was yeah, Pearl Jam. I mean, I was you know sort of a Nirvana.
Well, but it's
I'm
all
a
the
bit
same.
Older than
I mean, that you are that
and more
genre, that era,
right?
Yes, so it's
yes.
20 years. It's been 20 years.
That's
okay,
crazy.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it. And so Cameron Crowe goes and he does a documentary about Pearl Jam's last 20 years, and it's really good. It's just it's fun. It's the music's great, and I'll say two words, and that's Eddie Vedder. He's just amazing.
I've interviewed Eddie Vedder in person.
You have?
Yes.
Oh my God!
He was on the original Majority Report.
Name drop Friday. What?
Name drop Friday.
Yes. Well, you know, of course, like Janine was friendly with him, so you know, he came into the studio. I think we have video of it somewhere. I should post that.
Well, you're going to love this then. I mean, and of course, he's so political. The band's so political.
Yeah.
But and so you see all of that, and you see all the Ticketron stuff, and but also you see how they formed, and that's what I'm always so interested in is how I don't care really what anybody does if you're walking across a wire, but or in a band or cooking something or it's the process, and so you see everybody's process from the very beginning when these kids are like 18, but by 18 they're already, you know, they're really immersed in this. In this music scene, and it's just cool. I mean, I personally am so into that kind of thing that I just loved it. It was like eating, you know, big bowl of stew or something. It was just awesome. But
what does that mean?
I just when you well
eating
when you
a big
down,
bowl of
like,
stew. I've never heard
like,
anybody characterize anything other than eating stew as eating like
what?
Eating a big bowl of stew.
Oh my God! When you get think about it, you have your bowl. Someone pours in this great stew, and you're like, "Oh my God!" For the next 20 minutes, I'm just going to have a good time. It's just going to be good. It's going to be satisfying. It's going to be tasty.
That is
maybe
the
I'll
strangest
bread in there.
Metaphor I've ever or analogy I've ever heard. But Isabel, I got to say, this has been great. This has been like eating like soup, or like this has been like getting a great roll. And putting butter on it and
crunching in. I get it. Food is that's what I've always.
I can't believe you're a best-selling author. Like, where do you get these in crunching in? What?
To the bread roll.
All right. Well, okay, Isabel. These are good movie selections. Maybe we should just cut our winnings there. And
they're both really good.
All right. Well, I'm going to sit down and. Pour these movies into a bowl and use a spoon and a fork then eat them. All right. So Isabel Gillies, thank you so much. And good luck on your temper thing.
Day 51. Oh, no, today's day 52.
Congratulations.
Yeah, read my blog.
All right. I will. Bye. Well,
thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Isabel. All right,
have
folks.
Have fun watching movies.
Okay, I will. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time, as we do every week, to play our Song of the Week. As you know, Screaming Majority still on their moratorium. And, you know, they performed the week I went on vacation in New York City, and I didn't get a chance to see them. So, David, if you're listening, I apologize, and I didn't promote it because I'm still catching up on emails from vacation, and it was 2 weeks ago. But so isn't Jimmy Reefercake. According to his email, the week before February break, I was so delighted with your interview with Michelle Alexander in her book, The New Jim Crow, I was inspired to bring it to song. Please give a big shout out to Deron Woods, who provided the music. Deron, big shout out. It was actually one of his free giveaways at bestbeatstore.com. Give the man a plug. Okay, I just did. And for God's sake, please ask people to buy my debut album. Record sales are so dismal, it's putting a damper on my fire. And you know how you need to set a fire under the reefer cake. touche. I hope you all enjoy. Yes, let's hear it now. It is The New Jim Crow, Reefer Madness, Part 2.
Well, for marijuana possession, you know, a drug less harmful, less addictive than alcohol or tobacco, and at least, if not more prevalent in middle-class white communities and on college campuses as it is in the hood.
Yeah, that's right.
What you gotta say?
What you gotta say
about reefer?
Yeah,
don't you know, it's the new Jim Crow.
I like smoking reefers.
Yeah, you do.
I think reefers good. No one's got a problem with smoking reefers in my neighborhood. It's cool, and no matter what you do, it's reefer madness. Reefer madness for you.
Freedom isn't to do whatever you want to do. It's to do what you
it's
ought
to
do.
Jim Crow.
They're the anti-science ones. They're the ones who stand for science.
Oh, you know the sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Yeah. Got a problem with the government messing with my liberty. Oh, it's true. Oh, no matter what you do, it's free for madness.
Michelle
Alexander, righteous author,
this is you, Jim Crow.
Jim Crow, a fantastic read. Speaking truth to power, talking about legal weed. Probably doesn't even smoke it, but she knows it's what we need. For me, it's a great embarrassment to